Chapter 46. The Relief of Castle Cambrian. 1 second we were in Sevendor, blue skies above, white sands below. The next second we weren't anywhere. There was no colour, no sun, no earth, no horizon, no gravity. It was the sharpest moment of sheer existential terror, unhindered by actual danger, that I've ever endured. And then the next second, we were all falling down about 3/4 of an inch. None of the other troops had that experience, I was told, into the soft black mud of Gilmora. It was raining, the clouds overhead raging a foreboding grey that mocked the sun they hid. We had appeared in some farmer's field where once an Alka-Alon transfer point had lay. Now the farmer and his family had fled, their crops abandoned to be trampled by my little army. "Form up!" I bellowed from Traveller's back, desperately trying to regain my composure. I heard the call echoed across the field as my ancients tried to bring the Sevendori to order. The transit had produced a severe vertigo that made me nauseated. From the smattering of retching around me, I wasn't the only one. Even my horse was disconcerted. To suddenly go from the heat of the noonday mountain summer sun to the dreary morning of a lowland rainstorm was as depressing as it was disconcerting. Best to focus on our mission before our minds could catch up with our misery. I took a deep breath. "Sir Runcil, cavalry on our flanks. Deploy scouts to the north. Everyone else form into ranks. Keep your eyes open and be ready to kill anything hairier than you are." That brought a hearty chuckle from the Bovali, who had heard me say it often enough during the siege. The cavalry began forming up around me, the Westwood men deciding they would be most useful as my personal guard. Dara looked anxious and afraid. I wanted to soothe her, but being anxious and afraid would probably do her more good right now. To be a 13-year-old girl going into battle for the first time had to be challenging to her ideas of maidenhood. It was just as hot or hotter in Gilmora as it was in Sevendor, but it was a lot wetter. The humidity was oppressive, especially in armor. Not quite as bad as the jungles of Faris, but not pleasant. I reined Traveller around until I was certain everyone was decently recovered from the transport spell, and then I contacted my apprentices. Tyndall was riding with the rest of Arathaniel's troops, like demons were chasing them, speeding southward from their origin point in good order. They had encountered 2 small patrols of Gavani they had swept through on the way, with little or no casualties. A year into the war, and the goblins still had a hard time dealing with cavalry. Rondal's troop of infantry had found a defensible rise, 1/2 mile away from the castle's gate, with 10,000 or 12,000 goblins in front of them. They had yet to be spotted, thanks to a prodigious amount of spellcasting to keep them from being spotted. Taran can do that in his sleep. But they were close enough that my anxious apprentice told me he could smell goblin. They were beginning to dig in and form a redoubt from hastily cut fruit trees and debris, and lacing the area with defensive spells. As for us, we were almost 2 miles to the west of Taran's troop, and both of us were south of the castle. Taran's troop's job was to stay put and act like an anvil, a job well suited to the heavily armored infantry. Arathaniel's job was to act like a hammer, crushing anything in front of it. My troop? We were the tongs. We would help maneuver units of goblins from the siege and entice them into the space between hammer and anvil. Then we would hold them there until they were pounded flat. That was the plan. We carefully but quickly marched 1.5 miles across broken and deserted country until we found a large peasant's cot that had been abandoned weeks ago. The low stone wall around the structure looked vaguely defensible, so I established it as our field hospital, had the infantry secure it, and then prepared a smaller force to start goading the Gavani. We weren't supposed to be as static as Taran's troop, but we did need a defensible place to retreat to, and a post to guard the baggage and the inevitable wounded. The strategy was to keep tapping against the solid wall of goblins surrounding Terlaman and get them to break out against us in numbers. Not to break the siege directly, but to give the knight commander long enough for him to send a heavy sortie from the castle to hit them in the rear as they turned to face us. Until then, the cavalry from my unit and Taran's harassed the outer edges of the siege mercilessly, but didn't engage directly. Leaving a tithe of our men to fortify the cottage, my troop scattered out a bit and began the dangerous trek toward the castle. There was an oppressive feeling in the air, and the stench of rain, mud, death, and wood smoke made it that much worse as we rode and marched. The giddy enthusiasm of the Bovali had turned to serious business. Our scouts, Westwood men mostly, returned to tell us of a nearby band we could harass, a small camp of 20 or 30 picket troops. We whetted our blades with them in a frantic 3-minute melee. I was impressed with my Bovali. These mountain peasants had had but a year to rest and prepare themselves, but most were handling themselves like experienced soldiers. Their facility with the Wilderland's great bow was telling in those encounters, and their hours and hours of practice at the butts paid a deadly dividend. But the feeling of satisfaction the Bovali had as they stood amidst the wreck and ruin of that first goblin camp was tangible. They had returned to the battle stronger than they had retired from it, and they desired bloody vengeance. "We have to get their attention in a moment," I explained to my officers as we rode. "We'll have to attract a large enough band from the besiegers to weaken the line and allow Tarleman to break loose. Once he gets a couple of hundred cavalry past his dike, that should be enough to screen the rest." "So how do we distract them, Mage Lord?" Sir Ronsel asked. He had little head for war outside of the glorious charge, but he knew how to take orders, and he trusted mine. I wished I did. "We get them to think there's a richer prize just out of sight," I decided. "What would entice the Gavanni to break and give chase? The prospect of an easy victory over a far weaker force." They all chuckled. "Who doesn't enjoy that?" agreed Sir Ronsel. "So who gets to be this far weaker force?" "We do. We ride our cavalry as close as we can, pretend we're a patrol that's accidentally stumbled upon the siege, and turn tail and run. Slowly enough for them to catch us. Almost. Then we lead them just north of Taran's troop, where Baron Arathaniel's troop can push it between the three. The infantry in our troop can act as skirmishers to protect Taran's flanks." Ronsel and the rest all nodded. It seemed a perfectly reasonable plan. We halted about a half mile from the Gavanni lines, my 7 Dori taking positions behind every rock and tree, every wain and cot, readying their great bows and loosening their swords. I nodded to Dara, who took a moment to realize that she was being given orders. She nodded, unhooded her magnificent bird, and gave it a word before flinging it into the air. Then she closed her eyes. The Gavanni shaman had done a good job of hiding the number and nature of the besieging army from standard scrying, even the more thorough sorts of spells. Someone had been advising them on our combat magic. That left us guessing from various reports just what forces we faced and where they were deployed. Dara's hawk, Frightful, was my way around that. The Gavanni weren't expecting surveillance from a bird. We had to coax Dara to describe what she saw in her mind, through the eyes of her familiar, as it soared peacefully over the fray. The goblins were quiescent, as they often were in daylight, but the gloomy skies had encouraged them to be more daring in their raiding and sniping against the castle. While Dara had a hard time estimating the numbers, she could report on where most of the Gavanni were massed, around the south gate, near to hand, and where they were thinnest, the doorless and well-defended northeastern side of the manor. She could also ease my mind about something else. They had no trolls with them. Trolls can be devastating during a siege. They're walking siege engines themselves, able to lob large rocks with great force, if not with great accuracy. Their tremendous strength was invaluable in breaking walls or gates, wading through moats or climbing over dikes. I'd seen what a mass of trolls could do, at Timberwatch and elsewhere, and I was just as happy not seeing them. It certainly gave Tarleman and his men more of a chance. But everything else Dara told me was depressing. From what I could glean from her reports, there were probably 12,000 goblins ringed around the castle, with maybe 1,000 more beyond, on the perimeter. They weren't trying to make a serious entry into the fort. They were just harassing them, pinning them down, and waiting for the dragons. Time to go be a hero. "Sir Ronsel, prepare the cavalry for a skirmish. Infantry, wait here. With our intelligence and analysis sections," I added, nodding toward Dara and Pentandra and the knot of other civilian magi. None of them was ready for combat. I called to Rondal, mind to mind, and instructed Tarran to send his small cavalry force to meet us halfway. It took us nearly an hour to manoeuvre without being readily seen by the Gavanni, but eventually we came to a track between fields where Sire Kay and his men, including Sir Gimbal's cronies, were waiting patiently. "How much damage can we practically do?" asked Sire Kay, after greeting and debriefing. He looked in his element. Garbed in new armour, bearing the snowflake of Sevendor, snowstone pendant proudly on his breast. 250 against 10,000? 12,000, I corrected, and not much. But we can elicit their interest in chasing us. How far away is your redoubt? The Mage Lord gives the position more credit than it deserves, he chuckled grimly. But it is 3/4 of a mile down this track, around that curve to the east. It overlooks the road by about 4 feet. And Tarran has the place warded up, I nodded. Sounds like a good place for an ambush. So how does the Mage Lord plan to elicit their interest? It was my turn for a grim smile. Why, with an old-fashioned Narasi cavalry charge, of course. No magic, as of yet. They're expecting mundane resistance, and a bunch of flat-headed, chivalry-blinded knights diving chin-first into the fray is just what they're looking for. A quick raid on their perimeter, do a lot of damage, and then sprint toward Tarran. Or just past Tarran, hopefully. A cavalry charge. Sir Kay sighed happily. If a man has to die, this man doesn't. I insisted, neither do you. Don't make Estrut twice a widow, and don't make me look for a new castellan. Kill all you want. You were ordered not to get killed. In 10 minutes, Sire Kay and Sir Ronsel had 2 rows of cavalry lined up, heavy lancers in the front rank, and light cavalry in the rear, with skirmishers and flankers all around. With our banners unfurled, we proudly cantered into sight of the castle and dressed the battle line. That's black and red banner there, I said, pointing out a hideous rendition of a human face being slashed by claws. Gavanni art is particularly ghastly to humans, partially because they see in a slightly different colour spectrum than we do. Center on that. We ride, you order the charge. We hit, we shake the shit out of them enough to get them mad. Then we run like hell. Will you do me the honour of leading this charge, Sire Kay? As you wish, Mage Lord. He bowed. Let me instruct the men. The field in front of us was unharvested wheat, knee-high and ripe. The sheaves fell under the hooves of the cavalry as they steadily made their way across, leaving muddy trails behind them in the wet grain. We carefully leapt our horses over an irrigation canal before reforming up for the final charge. I stayed in the rear with the light cavalry. A war mage usually doesn't do the heavy lifting in a battle. That gave me an unparalleled opportunity to watch Sire Kay lead his recent enemies in a charge. We closed ranks, and with the Gavanni perimeter, Sire Kay signalled for visors to be dropped and lances to be catched. 100 yards away, the heavy lances solidified into a wall of sharp steel and horseflesh. One of the fine war lances I had gifted Sire Kay at his tournament fell into his big hands, the tip of a wedge of such weapons in the hands of men who had been trained from childhood to bear them. The skirmishers had eliminated the danger of pickets, and the Gavanni hadn't the time or the notion to dig ditches around their siege to discourage such raids. So when our line hit the rear of theirs, there was little to resist it. And that's when I noticed something curious about Sire Kay. It tugged on my consciousness until I felt compelled to view the scene through main sight, where I noted that against all reason, there was a magical wave building up around the knight. I was amazed as I witnessed the arcane energies coalesce around his body, and then focus on his arms and hands and lance. And when the line finally encountered the foe, that magical wave became expressed as raw magical force. It was similar to the most basic of offensive spells, those that express physical force in a general way, the magical equivalent of a punch in the nose. Only Sire Kay's mysterious spell focused all of that collected force down his arms and into his lance, and when the tip hit its first victim, the force released. Not only was the goblin he was attacking obliterated, but the force of the impact seemed to send an irresistible shockwave through the enemy. For 100 yards in front of him, every Gervan had been knocked down. That made the charge that much bloodier. Lances stabbed and threw, and hooves reared and dashed. The second line's swords and maces came out and waded into the survivors with deadly effect. I did little in combat myself, content for the moment with a few small spells, just to keep things interesting and safe. Honestly, the knights didn't need my help. Even Gimbal and his men seemed to fight the Gavanni with admirable fury.
"What the hell was that?"
came a mind-to-mind contact from Penny. "Would you believe it was Sire Kay?" I related.
"No, I wouldn't,"
she said sincerely. "But you did mention he had been affected by the snowstone. You think he's a latent mage?" "He may have latent talent, but he hasn't shown much expression yet. Perhaps this is what he does. More of a sport than a true talent." I told her the thaumaturgical theory I'd come up with to explain what I'd witnessed.
"That would make sense,"
she agreed. "If his talent has been latent, it would likely express this late in life in some manner to which he was already accustomed. Since he trained all those years at Tilting, then his body and his mind are just channeling his natural talent in that direction. If he's focused enough, he can probably manage a simple concussion wave." Well, that explained a lot about Sire Kay's impressive tournament win. Why haven't I seen it before now? I wondered as I jumped Traveller over a pile of goblin bodies.
"Because he doesn't joust very often, because you don't watch him tilt, and because you weren't looking for it. Don't you have a battle to fight?"
she asked nervously.
I'm fighting,
I assured her. Just to prove my point, I stabbed Twilight into the back of some Gervan's head as I passed.
"I just thought it was interesting. So is victory, so is life. Min, shut up and concentrate."
Everyone is a critic. Sire Kay had led his men 200 yards into the rear of the Gavanni ranks before their momentum was stopped. When Kay himself hacked down the banner I'd indicated, that signalled it was time for a hasty retreat. From the shouts of acrimony and anger I heard from thousands of Gavanni throats, I didn't think we'd have to worry about them chasing us. All around us, the other goblins had seen their comrades fall to the lances and swords of the cavalry yet again, and they surged at us in vengeance and hate. That's when I noticed something else interesting about the Gavanni. These warriors often as not lacked the complete body-covering black hair that I'd always associated with them. Instead, they showed only unpleasant-looking flesh of a dark or mottled colour. That prompted another conference, mind to mind, as we retreated.
"Who shaved the Gavanni?"
I asked Terlaman, once we'd broken free of the goblin line once again.
"I thought you paid attention to my dispatches,"
he taunted. "They've been appearing like this more and more. Prisoners have told us it was a response to your fire elemental at Timberwatch. Supposedly, as punishment for their failure, the dead god stripped all the hair off the survivors. Practically, it seems that hairless Gavanni burn less readily than hairy Gavanni."
"It doesn't do a thing for their appearance,"
I noted grimly. "They look even more ghastly without the fur." "Just wait until you see the eunuchs," he promised glumly. "Those hobgoblins are almost a foot taller, 2 ingots heavier. They can wear human-sized armor, some of them, and they're strong as Duin's farts. They usually use two-handed swords, too."
"They still aren't trolls,"
I pointed out. "He can breed them a lot faster," Terlaman riposted, "and they're a lot smarter than trolls." Before I could continue the conversation, the troopers in our line had caught up to each other and made a reasonably orderly retreat to where we had begun our charge. We had figured we had some time to kill before the footsore Gavanni infantry caught up with us. As it turned out, we didn't have nearly as long a rest as I would have liked. As I turned to survey our pursuit, I saw the gathering of infantry I expected I'd see as the surviving commanders recovered from the raid and tried to get their troops rallied. But breaking away from the rest of them, moving far faster than a goblin can on foot, several tiny figures began heading toward us. I quickly summoned Magesight and magnified the view. When it appeared that I was standing only yards away, I could see that razors weren't the only human invention the Gavanni had picked up in the last year. The little buggers had finally discovered cavalry. Not horses, not yet. The goblins were still far too short and stubby to make effective use of horse cavalry. But that isn't the only kind. Our pursuers were riding on a wide array of primitive chariots made of wheelbarrows, wagons, and other human devices, being pulled by very large canines.
Not the herding dogs the farmers of the Mindens used to keep their cows in their pastures, or even the warhounds some lords bred for battle. These were wild-looking dogs, or wolves, or some hideous combination, and they were harnessed to the rickety-looking chariots in pairs. Each of the cars contained a driver, and anywhere from 2 to 4 small goblins firing bows, hurling javelins, or throwing rocks. That doesn't sound very intimidating, but the Gavanni were learning to use their new weapons. Instead of just following us blindly, the chariot stopped within 50 feet of our line, turned to the side, and allowed the Gavanni within to loose a round of arrows at us. Goblin bows have a short range, but that many could put a lot of arrows in the air. They still weren't volleying, but more than one of my men fell to their withering fire. Thankfully, the Bovali bows had much higher range and far deadlier accuracy. Our men were concealed in the brush, and while the dozen goblin chariots rode around to give their archers a better shot, my Bovali very calmly and very systematically began targeting their dogs, if I can call those wild, shaggy beasts that. One by one, the beasts went down under the 3-foot-long spruce shafts, until their cavalry broke and retreated, leaving a third of their number dead on the field. But they had done their job. We had spent our time dodging arrows and darts, and while so occupied, the infantry had closed the distance by half, well over 2,000 of them. "It occurs to me we have elicited their interest, Mage Lord," Syarkes said, his armored chest heaving like a bellows. "Shall we remove ourselves to the ambush? Let me give them one last bit of incentive," I said, chewing my lip. The cavalry charge had been nice, emotionally gratifying and surprisingly inexpensive. Only 5 casualties and 2 fatalities. That was better than some practice charges I'd witnessed. But I wanted to enrage them and give them a reason to break ranks. I called a great bubble of vacuum to be born between my hands in response to my command, and I sent it speeding toward the very vanguard of the line. I waited for the sound of the deadly implosion. But nothing happened. Well, something had happened, just not what I had intended. I looked at the approaching line and recognized the presence of shamans. How many, I was unsure, but they were powerful enough to stop one of my better offensive spells. I looked out at the advancing column in surprise. "Those bastards just counterspelled me," I said angrily. "Mage Lord," Sayake asked, curious. "They're getting better at defensive magics, Kay," I warned. "The spells I hurt them with last year aren't as effective. And if I'm not..." "Watch out!" I shouted, as I felt a powerful wave of magic rise in the Gavanni ranks. I flicked my fingers and muttered the proper mnemonic to mitigate the attack. But for a few seconds, everyone in our line felt as if they were being peppered with a rain of fire, though no actual fire was evident. "Perhaps we should be on our way, then," Sir Ronsel suggested, sheathing his sword and eyeing the bellicose column as he recovered from the magical attack. I nodded, wide-eyed and pissed off, and we left. "Penny, have Dara scout the very large and angry mob that's chasing us now, please." "See? I told you that you should pay attention," she grumbled. There was a long pause. "What exactly do you want to know?"
"About how many are following?"
Another long pause.
"She says about a quarter of the goblins from the siege are giving chase. Any sign of Baron Arathaniel?"
Another long pause.
"She's getting her bird into position," she advised me. "Min, while we're waiting, I wanted to tell you that I got word from Sir Fetelan. He's one of the Horkans defending Barrowbell. They've got a skirmishing band of 1,000 that they're dealing with along their wall, but if he can, he'd like to send a relief sortie toward us.
If he can do it without compromising Barrowbell's defense, I won't say no. How the hell is the dead god getting so many troops in place so quickly?"
"Min, the Malapar, remember? We used it to escape Bovar. He's probably using it to dispatch his troops that way too. It wouldn't be efficient unless you did it in a large number, but then Shadul doesn't get tired, bored, or distracted. He could be sending thousands through every hour."
"That's a very depressing thought," I told her sullenly.
"Here's some good news then. Dara says that Baron Arathaniel and Sir Tyndall are but 3/4 of a mile northwest of Taran's Redoubt. They've halted in a hilltop pasture to rest, regroup, and get their bearings.
Looking at your mage map, how is our timing going to be on this?"
"Iffy," she admitted after a moment's pause. "If my intelligence is correct, then you should be passing us in a few moments.
If you keep going at your present speed, you'll be at the redoubt in 10 minutes. The goblins will be there in 20.
All right. The moment you and the Bavali see us pass by, fall back to the support positions. If this battle goes poorly, I'm going to want to have someone around to cover our retreat. Only one Westwoodman scout was visible when we returned to the site where we'd left our reserves, and he dove into the brush with a wave when he saw us. Penny and the others had already moved back, which made me feel better. We backtracked until we came to some broken country where we rode north. If the goblins followed our trail, then they would be focusing their attention on the tongs, while the hammer prepared to smash them into the anvil. We deftly avoided the lethal field of magic that Taran, Rondol, Planus, and the others had prepared, and I left a few static offensive measures on the road to help. The redoubt, concealed by both magic and camouflage, was ready to spring the trap. The air seemed filled with anticipation and excitement, so much so that I hoped the Gavani didn't feel it. Our runt cavalry force rode up a small rise just beyond the redoubt, wheeled, and got into formation. I took the time to clear the road dust from my throat with a swallow of liquor, then a swallow of water, just like they taught us in war college. The warmth filled me from within, even as the heat of the day kept my armor and horse steaming in the rain.
"That was fun," Sire Kay confided in me as the horses milled around in loose formation.
"I really enjoyed it," Sir Ansel agreed. "Even that pimple Sir Gimble fought well. The man might not be a real warbird, but he's as tenacious as you could ask for."
"Where the hell did they come up with that comic opera cavalry?" I demanded.
"Chariots made out of wheelbarrows, pulled by dogs?
That could be trouble."
"That was trouble," Sir Ansel nodded gravely. "They didn't have those at Beauval."
"They are learning from us, gentlemen," I observed. "We have to be smarter. This year they're driving dogs. 2 years from now they could be meeting you lance to lance from horseback."
"If they cross lances with Sire Kay, that will be interesting to watch indeed," Ronsil remarked, looking at my castellan suspiciously. "What sorcery did the mage lord lay upon your lance? That's an enchantment I desire to carry."
Sire Kay looked troubled for the first time.
"I am perplexed by that as well.
Did you hang a spell on me, my lord?" From his tone, I could tell he had no native objection to the idea, but he preferred to be informed about it. I had to shake my head.
"No."
That was all Sire Kay's own doing. Pentandra and I discussed it. It may well be that Sire Kay has developed a primitive magical talent while in such close proximity to so much snowstone for so long. In his case, it is being expressed in battle. With time and practice, he could learn to control it, even. Sire Kay looked disturbed.
"Am I to be a night mage, then?"
"You are to be my castellan," I reminded him, "first and foremost." That was a useful trick, no doubt about it, but such sports can be dangerous to your friends as well as your enemies if you cannot control them. I began to get out my smoking apparatus, but the rain chose that moment to start coming down more profusely, so I put it away and contented myself with another sip of liquor. Unfortunately, the Censorate's long shadow has made investigating such talents difficult over the years.
"Would that I had such a mighty talent," Sir Ansel said reverently. "No man could stand before me."
"It's not men that concern me now," Sire Kay said as he wiped his brow before slapping his war helm back on his head. "It is the approaching legion. It sounds as if they have discovered your sorceries, Mage Lord. Shall we go give them a proper greeting?"
I took a third swallow from my flask and then put it firmly into my right riding boot.
"It would really be rude not to," I agreed, drawing twilight from my back.